All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, fourth and final hour off and running here on a Thursday, day one of the NCAA tournament as it gets going in just over 2 hours Central Time this morning, 11:15 a.m. Central. It'll begin with Louisville, and here to talk all things March Madness, day one of the tournament, we welcome in Rob Doster, NBC Sports, as well as College Basketball Talk on NBC. Rob, good morning. How are you?
Oh, man, I am doing great. I'm ready for this thing to start. We've been waiting for a full year for it. In fact, it's here. Today's the day. I am like a six-year-old on Christmas morning right now.
Well, I think everybody thinks there's probably 6 to 8 teams that can win the national title. Kentucky is one of them. According to reports this morning, P.J. Washington will not play today against Abilene Christian because of the sprained foot. That may not affect Kentucky in the first weekend, but it could certainly impact if he is not healthy or 100% or playing in the second weekend. What does this injury mean for Kentucky and their national title hopes?
Well, if it's the kind of thing that's going to keep them out for an extended period of time, obviously, you know, this is a massive blow. When they made that run in January, where they made the leap from being a team that we thought had the chance to be really, really good to a team that we knew was a national title contender, it was all because P.J. Washington turned into a top-5 player in the country for like a good 6 weeks. And you know, I think Coach Cal, I'm paraphrasing here because I can't remember what his exact quote was, but he basically said, we don't need P.J. Washington to score 35 and get 20 boards every night, but we need him to play like he's trying to. And Coach Cal recognizes how important P.J. is to what they do. He is he's the guy that makes the matchups work, right? He is the forward that can overpower a smaller defender if you want to go small and still be able to guard him on the perimeter. He is the guy that can be a rim protector and hold his own against bigger defenders on the defensive end and then pull him away from the basket offensively because he can make threes and put the ball on the floor. He's such a useful and versatile player, and not having him in the lineup, like, they don't really have somebody like that. E.J. Montgomery can do it a little bit. And like, they'll be fine against Abilene Christian, and I don't think it'll necessarily hurt them even in the second round against Wofford or Seton Hall. I think they probably have enough to get that job done. But I do think that, you know, long-term, if this is a kind of thing where PJ's not going to be playing by the second weekend, then obviously, like, Kentucky's title hopes take a serious, serious, serious blow.
Now, what Rick Barnes has been able to do with this UT team this past season, a regular season anyway, it has been remarkable. They've had one of the best seasons in school history on the hardwood. Looking at what they've been able to do, where do you see UT? Or do you see them as a Final Four team that has the potential of being a national championship, or do you see this team as an Elite Eight because of the bracket they're in, where they possibly have to face Purdue or Virginia somewhere down the line? Do you see them more so as a Final Four moving into the championship game or an Elite Eight team?
Well, I definitely think they're good enough to win a national title, right? There are, like you mentioned, there are about seven teams, I think, that we can legitimately call national title contenders, and Tennessee is one of those six teams. Now, this is not the ideal bracket for them. You know, I think Virginia, for me, Duke is the best team in the country, full stop, clear cut. And then I think Virginia is the second best team in the country, full stop, clear cut. So ending up in that region is not necessarily ideal. And I don't think that they match up perfectly with Virginia either. But you got to remember, this is a team that has beaten Kentucky twice in, the last month when Kentucky was at full strength. This is a team that beat Gonzaga on a neutral floor when Gonzaga was at full strength. This is a team that has a first-team All-American in Grant Williams. You know, they have guys that are going to end up playing in the NBA. I think Admiral Schofield's going to be a top 40 pick. I think Jordan Bone's got a chance to play in the NBA. So it's not like this is a bad basketball team, and it's not like they don't have a chance to beat Virginia. I mean, Florida State proved it. Like, you don't have to be better than Virginia to be better than them on one night and beat them. So, yeah, I do think that they can get to the Final Four. It's not going to be the easiest road, and I don't think that they would be favored. But you know what? If you're going to go out and win a national title, you're going to have to beat a great team at some point. And just for Tennessee, you know, it's a little unfortunate that they're going to end up having to play Virginia in the Elite Eight before they can get to the Final Four. But if your goal is to win a national title, you're going to have to beat a team like Virginia at some point. So you might as well get it out of the way in the Elite Eight, right?
Rob, one of the things we were discussing this morning, we threw out a hypothetical question. If a national champion or a team is going to make a really deep run off of the one or the two line, who are some of the teams that could make some noise? And there's been a common theme of Florida State. You know, Auburn's a hot team, so four seeds, five seeds. But then you have a team like Houston, who is sitting there as a three seed with a coach like Kelvin Sampson. They won 31 games. And I don't feel like they're getting any recognition. Is it because of the region they're in with Carolina and Kentucky and Auburn and Kansas? And secondly, does their chances really increase if P.J. Washington's injury is big because they could easily meet in the round of 16?
Yeah, you know, they're good. My thing with Houston is I think that they are the kind of team that is going to beat all the teams that they are better than. They have a very high floor in that sense where – you know, they're not going to beat themselves. They're old. They're very well coached. They don't make mistakes. I just don't know how high their ceiling is. And I actually have Iowa State beating them in the second round because I think Iowa State, when they put it all together, Iowa State to me is a top 12 to 15 team in college basketball. I think that they have more talent than anybody else in the Big 12. I think that there are four, maybe five NBA players on that roster. And I think that they have the kind of the lineup makeup. I mean, they're not what Villanova was last year, and I'm not comparing them to Villanova, but the way that Villanova team was built, in the sense they had four or five guys that could play around the perimeter and make a shot and beat somebody one-on-one and attack a closeout and understand how to create a shot for somebody else, Iowa State is kind of in that same mold. So I think Iowa State is actually going to make a run. Now, I need to be clear, because I have to say this. Every time I get on the Iowa State bandwagon, they end up going straight in the tank and having like a three-game losing streak. And we can't have that happening right now. So I am not on the Iowa State bandwagon. I'm never getting back on the Iowa State bandwagon. I just have them going to the Elite Eight.
Well, it's why I'm picking my alma mater to lose to Villanova in the third round because I'm too close to the situation, Rob. Here's the thing. I feel pretty good. You mentioned Virginia being the number two team, full stop. I have Duke and I think Carolina's a clear cut best team in their region. I think they're the most complete team, maybe arguably in all of college basketball. I'm with you on Virginia and Duke. I feel comfortable about picking those three. The region that I've just waffled on all week long. At first, I had Florida State winning it. I could see the case for Michigan. You know, Derek Mason over here has got Syracuse. We've seen Syracuse as a 10 seed make it to the Final Four. Gonzaga's really good, obviously. Murray State's dangerous. I really like Buffalo and Nevada, actually, in this region to make some runs, potentially. Texas Tech's great on defense. I cannot make any heads or tails of this region. How do you see that region playing out?
I think that's going to be the region where insanity happens. And it's just for all the reasons that you mentioned. It feels like we have a good veteran, tough team in each one of like the top seven or eight seeds. So that's going to be where it's fun. And I'm glad that we always have one region where you just know it's going to get completely bonkers. Now, the worry I have with Syracuse is no Frank Howard. Mm-hmm. Kind of limits them offensively a little bit, and he's really, really good at the top of that zone. And the thing that intrigues me about them against Baylor, the reason I think they win is because Baylor turns the ball over on like 22% of their possessions, and Syracuse is really, really good at turning those turnovers into buckets at the other end. And without Frank Howard, I think that hurts him a little bit. I have Gonzaga losing to Florida State, but I have Florida State losing to Texas Tech in the Elite Eight, and Texas Tech being the team that gets to the Final Four. I'm all in on that team this year. They have what I think is probably the best offensive player in that region in Jarrett Culver. I have him as a first-team All-American. I think that with the way that they can defend, teams are going to have a very, very difficult time scoring on them. And they have been absolutely unconscious from beyond the arc for like 2 months now. And obviously, if they have a night where they're not making their threes, they could probably get knocked out by, you know, maybe even in the second round of the tournament. But I just don't see that happening. I think they've been too consistent. I think they've proven themselves as being one of college basketball's elite this year, and I'm rolling with them. I'm rolling with the Red Raiders. I have a lot of faith in Chris Beard and being able to find this, figure this out.
Yeah. Rob, good stuff. We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, you got
Rob. Rob Doster, NBC Sports.
A Texas Tech team, very, very good on defense. Mm-hmm. I think that bracket's going to be crazy. I mean, you can make the case for Buffalo, Florida State, yeah. Gonzaga. You like Syracuse. I mean, you can make the case. Michigan doesn't even get talked about. They're a two seed.
I think Michigan's a bit overrated.
If they match up with athletes.
Yeah.
That's why I like Nevada to beat them in the second round because Nevada's athletes.
I don't have them getting past the second round.
You got Nevada too?
Yeah.
All right. Nevada
over Michigan and then.
Go Wolfpack.
so, you know.
All right, we'll come back. We'll react to a couple of things that Rob had to say. Continue with the March Madness conversation. Hal Gill, bottom of the hour. Stay there. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. .918 Morning Drive here on Thursday, Bridgestone Arena. If you missed the new musical release from Not Josh Upton at 7 o'clock this morning, you will hear an encore presentation of that coming up.
Super.
In just a moment. Reaction to what Rob had to say. And also, again, I mean, maybe it'll be a better opportunity with P.J. Washington banged up. I just feel like Houston's a 3-seed that's getting absolutely zero attention.
I agree, and it's obviously because they play in the American. But you have Iowa State winning in the second round. Rob's got Iowa State. I've got Iowa State. I think you're right. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about Texas Tech. Nobody's talking about Virginia Tech. No one's talking about Wisconsin or Kansas State. I mean, there's just certain teams that no one's talking about. Some of that means that they'll surprise, and some of it means there's a reason, right? There's a reason we're talking about Oregon instead of Wisconsin because – everyone thinks Oregon's going to win, so maybe they're better than Wisconsin. So we'll see what happens. Today is just such a great day. You just kick back, and your bracket could be blown up in the first, 3 hours of the day. Who cares? You sit back and you enjoy it, and you watch the games, and you have a blast.
All right, Chase McCabe, I will allow you to do it again. You set it up in the first half of the show. Let's get to what you decided to put together and. Tell the people exactly what we're doing.
Well, look, my only role in this is I came up with the title. This came up yesterday about it's taking the Oasis song Wonderwall, and I said, Braden Gall, you're a know-it-all. And therefore, Josh Upton basically took it and ran with it.
Not Josh Upton.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes.
The artist formerly not known as Josh Upton.
You speak, you finish up your point, then we pass it on around the room. By now, you should have realized that's exactly what we gotta do. You don't believe that anybody knows the things you do about this town. We let you talk on in the hopes that you'll tire out. You're sure they've heard it all before, but you're never gonna shut your mouth. You don't believe that anybody knows the things you do about this town. 3 mics are on, but only one man's talking. Even in a commercial break, you won't stop squawking. There are many things that I would like to say on the show, but I don't get time. Said maybe you're the one that's gonna save us in the ratings. But Braden Gall, you're a know-it-all.
The writing, is exceptional.
We have a couple of texts that I will read. The first from Braden's former co-host, Jason Fitz,
God.
That says, quote, I'm literally crying. Epic.
Oh, God.
Darren McFarlane said he about peed himself, that it was hilarious. Which I can attest to that. When I listened to it this morning for the first time, I almost couldn't move.
It's the writing, but it's also the delivery. Like, you can draw up a good game plan, but yet your game day execution can suck. Like, that was not the case.
Well, and timing is everything, right? Uh-huh. Like, my name happens to rhyme with know-it-all and happens to fit into Wonderwall, and it's brilliant. It's sheer brilliance. So... You guys,
thank you.
When I got a song about Derek Mason's two-part questions and Nick's ears coming soon, y'all better laugh at yourselves too, all right? That's all I'm saying.
Oh, my goodness.
Nobody makes fun of themselves better than this show.
Can we get a Buck song?
It wouldn't be a song.
Why not?
Upton would end up in a grave.
Exactly.
But it wouldn't be like murder or homicide. Buck would be like, Josh, come out with me. And then just he would just keep buying him tequila shots until he died
exactly.
of alcohol poisoning.
But see, that's the thing about Buck is even when you take a shot at him, he enjoys it because you're spending yeah. time and energy yeah. discussing his being.
He yeah, loves
true.
It.
That's true. Right now, let's stop.
He soaks up the attention.
We sustains have another. Me.
Chaz, formerly of a promotion, says, not Josh Upton deserves a Grammy.
I mean, the writing is exceptional. There's no doubt about it.
If I was Chaz, I'd be more worried about the state of my basketball team.
True.
Gox Tigers.
Big LSU guy. Go Tigers. All right, Hal Gill at the bottom of the hour. A couple of things here on the Preds. Big one tonight. They take on the Penguins. Both teams enter with 89 points. Preds chasing Winnipeg. Pittsburgh chasing Washington. We discussed it earlier in the show. Is it out of line to say even with wins against Pittsburgh and Winnipeg, mm-hmm. you will fully buy back in and believe when they win an opening series in the playoffs? Or is that too extreme?
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair if that's how you feel about it. I think, you know, personally, I'm sort of gaining in confidence every game, but like I still need to see it again against Pittsburgh tonight, see it again against Winnipeg. Also, I would petition the schedule makers to never have to play both of your game against Pittsburgh in the last 10 games. That is when Pittsburgh always is playing its best. We've seen this before. They win cups because they play great hockey at the end of the year, and then they go on championship runs. Why you would ever want to play Pittsburgh twice in the final 10 days seems just ridiculous. So we'll see what happens tonight. It'll be a Stanley Cup type of game. There's still plenty of history, right, between these two franchises. So people don't forget, Sydney.
There's also one other thing that we have to get back into. Uh-huh. We have not done it at all this year, and it was something you pointed out last year. The way the playoffs set up in the NHL, you were kind of – that was like one of your big tangents
yeah,
last year.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's sticking out this year with current projections and seeding where you're like,
no,
they've got to fix this?
It's far more balanced this year where, you know, the last year what it was the number one in team in the entire NHL finishing 1-2 in the division, forcing to being played in the second round. And that's sort of the anomaly. It doesn't happen all the time. But when it does happen, it feels like there needs to be a mechanism to fix it because it just doesn't strike me as the right way to determine a champion, right, to have the best two teams in the NHL play in the second round. Well, that's not going to happen this year. There isn't going to be 1-2 overall in the entire world playing in the second round unless I haven't checked the standings in Tampa's.
And that's
Tampa's,
why they're not going to change
situation.
It because of what you just said. The odds of it happening a lot is very slim. You just got it. It happened last year with Winnipeg and the Nashville Predators having to play one another.
So now that I say that, Boston has 97 points. That makes them number two in the NHL. They are number two to Tampa Bay in the same division. So in theory,
they could play.
Tampa and Boston will play in the second round if they both move on. They would play in the second round, and you could make the case that those are the two best teams in the NHL. Again, I just don't like that. And again, this is about Boston and Toronto now, right? It's not about the Predators. I just don't like that as a form of determining your champion, that if the best two teams in the world play in the second round and there's not even a chance that they play in the third round, it just feels like it's a little too early for that to happen.
I wonder how many times has it happened. And if it hasn't happened as much, then I don't see them changing it. But if it starts to reoccur more and more moving forward, I think there possibly will be a mechanism.
Washington won the President's Trophy with 118 points 3 years ago. Pittsburgh was number two in the league with 111. They played in the second round.
Uh-huh.
So this would be the third year in a row that it would happen. And they haven't had the system in place for very long. So it's fairly new. Years before that in the Western Conference, Dallas was 109, St. Louis 107. Best two teams in the Western Conference had to play in the second round. So it seems like it's happening a lot, you know.
Yeah, so you wonder why now, if it indeed is happening a lot, then why not change it? I thought it would be, if it was just one of those things where it happens every so often, then why change?
I love give the one seed to the best team in the best division. Like, I love one and two and then slot them all the way to eight. I like that concept. And I know they're trying to build rivalries in the division, and that is fun. I get why they're doing that. But, like, I always love the old school of one through eight. And, you know, one plays eight, two plays seven, three plays six, four plays five. I always thought that was a really fair and fun way to do it, and I still do. So.
The big finish is coming your way at 9:45. But up next, we talk Preds, Penguins with Skillsy. Hal Gill next on Morning Drive. Nine 9:31 as we welcome you back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5. The game, we are live this morning. Jack Daniels Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena, the Predators and the Penguins. Coming up this evening, we will talk to Hal Gill in just a moment. The big finish coming up at 9:45. Are you in scoreboard watching mode right now? Because I feel like for the last 10 days or so, every time I've done my homework and gotten ready for a certain game for the Preds, I always look to see who Winnipeg plays. And I'm like, okay, they play Vegas. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and what's funny is the players will admit that they are all doing it. Every single day they wake up, they get up, and checking the point totals and the scoreboards and the matchups, it's all 100% part of their routine. And I think it's fine. I think it's great that they just say openly, yeah, we look at it. Because then it means we don't have to ask them, hey, do you watch the scoreboard? Like, we just know they all do because it matters.
We welcome in Skillsy, Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst. Hal, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing good. So we're down to single digits in the regular season. We were just discussing scoreboard watching. If you're a Preds fan, if you're a Preds player, keeping an eye on what Winnipeg is doing. When you were a player, was that something that you did? And how difficult is it to kind of block out the opponent and what they're doing and just handle your own business?
Well, I guess it comes down to being a pro. You kind of have to know what you need to do to get where you need to go. So in the end, I was always watching. You know, you're always paying attention to what teams are doing. If they're moving ahead, if they're coming at you, if you know where they're standing. But in the end, you know, it's really what you do. And, you know, it's a nice position to have it in under your control. You know, if you can win your games and get in, then that's what you're ultimately worried about.
So I don't think fans should be buying into what they've seen in just a three-game span. If they play well against Pittsburgh and Winnipeg, I think you could start to buy in to, you know, 7 out of 9 and 5 straight, and they're playing some really good hockey. What have you seen from some of the reasons that's going to happen are some of these peripheral pieces and new pieces? Kyle Turris back on the ice, active, not incredibly productive, but active. Wayne Simmonds breaks through. Brian Boyle's been great. Mikael Granlund, what have you seen? Are you seeing things over the last three games that tell you that these guys are figuring it out, coming together, and are on the verge of something here?
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but I'm not. I was never really worried about those guys getting in. You know, you worry about the chemistry and who they're going to play with, but I wasn't worried about their production. I'm still not worried about Kyle Turris's production. I know it's been a tough year for him, but I think he's got it. What I was a little concerned about, and what I'm really happy to see last three games, is the defensive side of the game for the Preds has been really good. You take a team to play against, and you play really well defensively against them. And then that Toronto team is high-powered offense, and the Preds look really good. I mean, Pekka had to make some I don't even know how he made that save, but I thought defensively they really locked it down and played some good hockey that way. So those pieces come in. It's nice to see Simmer get his goal, and I feel like now there might be more to come after that one. But, you know, Boyle's been good. Granlund, it looks like he's coming into form. You know, these guys are all coming in, but it's the defense that matters.
Hal, we were very critical of this team throughout the regular season with the power play deficiencies. We tried to break it down and figure out what was the problem, but for the last 11 games, the power play is clicking at about a 24% rate. What have you seen over this sample size of games that makes you believe it's turned around long-term moving forward into the postseason?
I think probably a buy-in to what they have, to the personnel that they have. I think when you added Boyle and you added Simmonds, I think for the most part they did business as usual when they got here. Now they're starting to say, hey, we have these guys in front. Let's get it to the net. Let's go for it. You know, they're not tinkering around looking for the perfect play. They're going and getting it to the net and firing it and chasing down rebounds, battling for pucks and doing all the little details on the power play that you need to be successful. So, they've had a couple big goals. They almost had a big comeback with the power play and, you know, in a couple games, I think they've done their job. So it's coming around.
Hal, you got the Penguins tonight. We certainly know the history against this team from two Junes ago when they met in the Stanley Cup Finals. We know the obvious, you know, the Crosbys and the Malkins of the world, but what is there something under the radar or something that doesn't get enough attention with the Pittsburgh Penguins that makes this team so viable year in and year out?
It's all about – I know it's so – I hate doing it because I hate relying on stars, but Crosby really – he pushes the team. He kind of put them on their back. He's having an MVP season, and he kind of carries them. And it allows – when he's going, it allows guys like Jake Guentzel to come in and start doing their job. They just have – they're missing Malkin right now, but, you look at Kessel, you look at other guys that step up and do their job and have that ability to score. And they're in every game. And then Crosby just puts them over the top. I hated saying it when I was playing, but when I was with Crosby, you'd sit back and say, hey, Sid, let's win this game for us, And he's a guy that can go out there and do it. And not just by what he does, but how he pushes other players on his team to perform.
When we look at postseason success overall for the Preds team, if they're going to win a cup, obviously everything has to be better. We know the power play has to work. The defense has to be a little bit better. Pekka's going to have to be consistent every single night. Secondary scoring, right? Like all the bullet points we talk about with the team. What's the one that would concern you the most out of all of those factors about a deep playoff run for the Predators?
The most concerning thing, and I think they're addressing it right now, last three games anyway, is their defensive side. I think if you want to win in the playoffs, you can't have a one-trick pony. You can't just rely on one thing. It's going to be the Jofa line might be the difference in a series, but then the next series it might be the fourth line that changes the pace. It might be a Cody McLeod that gets in and goes heavy on the forecheck and bangs on the D, that changes the series. And so, they're going to have to rely on their defense. The big four have to play great. Their power play is going to have to get a big goal. The penalty kill is going to have to do it. I think they have all those pieces. The big thing for me is defensive zone coverage, being able to use those guys in the neutral zone and lock down like they did against Toronto, lock down a team. When things aren't going their way, they have to play good defense, and that's what they've been addressing the last three games. So I'm optimistic.
All right, Skillsy, the constable, Chase McCabe, is going to be taking down a bracket to head coach Peter Laviolette. So we have to ask you, are you a one-bracket guy?
I'm ashamed to say, I love watching all these games, but I don't know anything about it. And so I'm sitting there when I'm doing a bracket, and I'm going – well, I assume the best team's going to win. And the second I stray from that, I end up picking a team that has no chance of winning. And so, I think it's dumb luck, and I love watching it because of the drama, but it always comes down to one shot at the end. So I don't tinker with it too much. I play the favorite. That's weak.
We got you. Hal Gill, good stuff, Hal. We appreciate it.
All right, anytime, guys.
There you go.
If Lavi's bracket does not have Tennessee beating Belmont in the national championship game.
Now, is this actually – have we been given word, Chase? Or is this going to be something that actually gets posted?
Yeah. So we
can track it?
Yeah. I don't know if it'll get posted online. But, we'll be able to find out. We'll make the official picks during the break, and then I'll deliver it.
Yes.
Okay. There we go.
Very excited.
Very, very excited. Can't wait. Big finish. I'm excited for that because it means the end of the show. That's next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is time for the big finish. We do it each and every day at 9:45 or thereabouts. This morning, we are 1 minute early. Tip of the cap to us. Getting the break on time. Powers that be will be happy.
Cool.
In the Big Finish, we give you the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. We give you what we learned on today's festivities, as well as what is on tap for today. And if you can't find something on tap today or tonight, that's a you problem. Because there's a bazillion basketball games.
You
there's two good hockey
television
games.
Television, if that's the case.
You just don't like sports.
Yeah, you got a point. And there are some people that don't.
But I think this show even welcomes in the non-sports fan.
Yeah.
Because the entertainment value is so high that we bring in many fringe and even niche sports fans.
There you go.
You like that?
Yeah, I like it. Should be a
exactly.
Should be a part of our promo.
Damn right. Let's get to the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. That's Mashal. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive. We are off and running here on this Thursday on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Upset alert today. Today, Minnesota will beat Louisville.
Right, is that wishful thinking?
No, I'm just saying.
Because you don't want to play Louisville in the second round?
No, I'm just saying it's going to be upset.
Look, Stillman's going to hear that and go, they want you all.
Richard.
Stephen A. on his radio show said, and this is another total, we've talked about the Stephen A. mistakes lately. Mike Trout got that monster contract. He has a guest on. And the first question to the guest was, how does this impact Mike Socia staying long-term with the Angels as the manager?
Oh, my God.
Mike Socia is no longer the manager of your Los Angeles Angels.
Happy birthday to him.
My man's
I
overextended.
I don't care.
Yeah, man.
Good Stephen, luck.
I don't think he's got to slow down.
I don't think he's overextended. I think he is mailing it in, and he's riding coattails and cashing checks and – I think he's on scholarship at this point.
No, man, that dude is everywhere. Like that, he doesn't say no. He's like Kevin Hart or The Rock of sports talk media. He just hovers around televisions and radios and just waits for the opportunity to spew takes. I love it.
Instead of waiting, you should be doing research.
Yeah, no, this
and
is
by
way
research,
funnier.
I mean, know who the stinking head coach is.
That's easy, ain't it?
Said maybe you're the one that's gonna save us in the ratings. But Braden gone, you're a know-it-all.
Oh, man. Hey, can we leave work now? Play that on a loop for the next 3 hours, and we are out of here, okay?
Full disclosure.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's so good.
Josh Upton just took that and ran with it.
I want to know if – I don't know what the vasectomy doctor's title is, right? Like, I know you have, like, an oncologist, right, that deals with, like, your cancer scan, or you have a, you know, a pediatrician, right, is for your children's doctor. What is the name of the doctor that does the vasectomy?
He's a snipologist.
It's just a tiny little – it's just a tiny little incision, right?
Right.
So if you – if we could find out from one of our listeners if they happen to be a snipologist – if they could call us or tweet us and let us know how much patient volume increased yesterday so that everyone's on the couch today and tomorrow with the frozen bag of peas watching basketball all day. Honey, I can't move.
Come on, honey. What are we doing out there, man?
As we welcome in our man Joe Rexroad, columnist for the Tennessean, to talk all things Nashville sports.
When you talk about the Maryland matchup, Bruno Fernando, I mean, I think that's a really good matchup. Usually a Belmont goes into a game like this against a Power 5 team with a big man like that, and you're like, well, there's a huge mismatch. But I don't think it is, especially if his ankle responds well. You know, obviously, it's just 2 days later. But, yeah, I do think they have a real chance.
We do have the head coach, Peter LaViolette, joins us for another installment of Coffee with the Coach. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Hey, Coach, do you watch CNN? Yes, I got him to laugh. Yeah.
What are you going to grill me on?
Coach, I actually want to get some thoughts on something we've talked about for a majority of the season was the power play woes. But all of a sudden, the last 11 games, you guys are clicking at about a 24% clip. What has been the turnaround with the power play execution?
Did you guys see that on CNN?
No. Most impressive 10-year-old accomplishment, I came in third place in the school spelling bee.
That's pretty good. Good for you. This picture of this Rubik's Cube is actually quite amazing.
Uh-huh.
Like, the, I mean, it's pretty amazing, like, the color pattern. It's about, like, what would you say it was, like, probably 8 feet tall?
Seven.
7 feet tall? That thing's huge. Really well done. But again, clearly a huge social life for this young man.
Yeah. And that was the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. I can just see it later today. You put on CNN, headline news, boom, Preds 24% on the power play. Leading with the big story from Derek Mason.
Absolutely. There you go.
Jake Tapper reporting, Preds fixed power play.
Wolf Blitzer here from Bridgestone Arena coming up on the Situation Room. Kyle Turris.
Benched or not?
Oh, man.
Is there turmoil?
Breaking news.
Let's get to what we learned today, Buck.
Now, what we learned today.
So I learned today that I think Josh Upton really needs to have a life intervention and decide if he wants to continue on in sports radio or pursue a musical career, because I think he's that talented.
The kid, what I know is, the kid got skill, man. He has skills. He needs to parlay this into some type of, I don't know, something that he does for others, you know, whether it be the mothership, and I can see Josh in front of the camera. Just spewing something about
with a mustache.
Yeah, spewing something about, you know, Nashville
Constables lettuce
or something else. He could take this thing far. He could be the next Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, I think we've learned that Josh Upton has found his niche. His niche is making fun of our show in song form on Sports Talk Radio. I've learned that I'm the Rodney Dangerfield of this show. No respect from nobody.
Well, just don't die too soon, because Rodney Dangerfield left way too early.
Yeah.
How old was he when he died? I don't know that.
In his 40s, maybe?
Wow, was he really that young?
I believe so.
I learned today that Rodney Dangerfield died too young.
A lot of them do.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I take that back. It wasn't Dangerfield.
Oh,
it was Farley. It was Farley.
You just killed a person?
Him too.
It was Farley.
You just killed a guy?
No, I think Rodney Dangerfield was probably in his 60s. Let me double check. There's another guy I'm thinking of.
Well, Farley passed away.
No, actually, you know, Dangerfield was 82. So I'm way off about that.
He was 40 in his 60 to 80.
You killed Rodney Dangerfield 40 years early.
Yeah, I killed him 4 decades too soon. What is the guy's – Chase, you'll know this.
That's right. That was right.
Married with Children.
Rodney Dangerfield. Damn.
Married with Children episode.
Yeah.
He makes a cameo as an angel.
Oh, yeah.
He was in the movie with Dangerfield, Back to School.
I have no idea what you
No, I know what you're talking about. I don't know.
Derek and I are like, huh?
I have no idea who y'all are talking
about. I love that episode, by the way.
I know comedians that have died young, but I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Sam Kinison is the guy.
Okay.
Yeah, you were confusing with Rodney Dangerfield? Yeah, I love Sam Kinison.
Let me see. I think he died too soon.
This is
Richard Pryor?
This is what I've
learned. Here we go. Sam Kinison died at 38 years old.
Oh.
It's very early.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not 82.
Correct.
This is what I've learned.
I gave Sam Kinison a proper burial.
you cut Rodney Dangerfield short by 4 decades. Oh, God.
No, I'm good.
You good?
Good one.
All right. Let's get to quickly what is on tap for tonight.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's what's on tap tonight, now on Morning Drive.
All right, boys, obviously the Preds and the Penguins tonight. Also a good one with Winnipeg and Vegas. But I'm going to just give you one game, the game that I'm most intrigued to watch today. I think it's probably an easy one here locally. I'm going to go Belmont, Maryland. An interesting thing about that is Maryland opened up as a 5-point favorite. Mm-hmm. They are now down to -3.
Wow.
That is a 210 tip on True TV.
I got Belmont. That's the game I will be watching. Michigan State plays as well, I think, right after Belmont.
145.
So it's right before.
Yep.
So obviously I got to be watching both. So, yeah. I guess a lot of people will be in front of the television who loves college basketball today, tomorrow, Saturday.
Oh, I texted the wife. I was like, can you pick up the kids? I'm busy. I don't know if it's going to work, but we'll see what happens. 2:10 p.m. Central Time, Maryland and Belmont. That's the big one there. Things get started with Louisville and Minnesota. You got Auburn in action today. Your Spartans, of course, in action. Florida, Nevada at 5:50 p.m. You got Kentucky in action at 6. Let's see here. Other local teams. That's kind of about
That's
it for the day.
No,
but
the local team.
From the SEC, a lot of SEC teams in action today. And then, of course, Preds tonight for sure. But this is just wall-to-wall hoops, man. It's so much fun. So
we have now seen a 15 beat a 2. It's happened multiple times. PJ Washington out.
Is it 5 times?
Anybody giving Abilene Christian a chance today?
No. 0% chance.
Nah.
Okay.
How many? Is it 6 times that it's happened? The old Hampton State upset?
Duke lost as a 2 to Lehigh.
Yeah, you think it was Hampton State.
Who get high?
God. That was pretty.
On that note,
that was a Detroit version of Nick Hale.
That is correct.
That was.
All right, we will come back tomorrow bright and early, 6 a.m. to recap and break down everything from the world of hoops today as well as the Preds tonight and get you set for another action-packed day tomorrow. March Madness continues. We'll break it all down at 6 o'clock. Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, I love you.